Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, Chef Jose Andres. If there's a natural disaster in the world these days, chances are Jose Andres and his team from World Central Kitchen are there too. So, as Hurricane Dorian slammed into the Bahamas this weekend, that's where Chef Andres headed, to provide meals to those in need. 2 years ago, he took the U.S. government to task for its performance in Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria. He wrote about that experience in a book titled We Fed an Island, The True Story of Rebuilding Puerto Rico One Meal at a Time. I spoke with him about disaster relief and his new cookbook, Vegetables Unleashed, all in front of a live audience here in D.C. this past Saturday. It was part of the Library of Congress National Book Festival. Here's that conversation. Jose, here we are nearly 2 years after the hurricane in Puerto Rico. You went there, you did as much as you could. They are still recovering. What do you think of that?
Well, listen, when a hurricane like Maria happens, you need to understand that destruction is going to be so great that it's going to take a long time to recover. If we remember Katrina, and this happened already so many years ago, still they are recovering in many parts of New Orleans. And this is only telling me one thing, that I have no doubt that America is the most amazing country my wife and I, we could join as immigrants when we came over 25 years ago. Because I learned that when America comes together and they put aside pity fights and political parties and Republicans versus Democrats, and we only bring the best heart of every single American people, we can recover out of anything. But we need to leave the politics out of it. And that's it. At the same time, I'm saying I want to leave the politics out of it. If certain things cannot happen. I cannot have my president use almost finger-pointing to Puerto Rico when a hurricane is about to hit the island. That's not the moment to do it. And that's what we have leaders for, to bring all of us together, even people that think different than us, people that don't see about issues in the same way that us, but at the end, genuinely, we all agree more on things that we disagree. That we, the people, is stronger than anybody, that we cannot break that bond. So that's what I believe about Puerto Rico and reconstruction. I know I didn't answer you the answer is straight up, and I made it my own answer. But, Diane, you know we are in Washington. You know we are in Washington, and politicians never answer anything after they are asked.
Oh, but you do.
And even cook like me, we just learned the bad ways, and I apologize for it.
So when Hurricane Maria erupted 2 years ago, you chose to go directly down there. Tell me why you felt you had to go do that.
Well, we saw the hurricane was going to be total destruction. And I felt the urge to go. It's not the first time I did it. I've been doing this for many years before. So really, the first time was in Haiti. And then we began going to hurricanes all around. Puerto Rico, when I landed, I told my wife, I landed on a Monday, 3 days after Maria hit the island, on probably the second plane that landed in San Juan. And I told my wife, I'll be back by the weekend, because we had some friends visit them from Spain. I still remember calling her Thursday, 3 days later, telling her, I'm not coming this weekend, and actually I don't know when I'm coming back, because the problem, the destruction was bigger than what you even were watching at home. We had 3.7 million Puerto Rican Americans in an island without cell signal, without electricity, without water, because all the water systems broke down. And on paper, without food. So what a cook can do is put at the service of others what we know. Gather the food, gather the cooks, find the kitchens, and start feeding as many people as you
can. So what did you cook? What were you relying on?
So the first day we landed, I sent a WhatsApp, not knowing if any of my friends in the island were going to be able to receive it. And when these emergencies happen, you have to be very clear. You need to give a very simple message that everybody understands and so everybody can stick to plan. And the WhatsApp message was, I landed, I'll be at 3 o'clock on this location. And when I arrived to that location, before that, I had time to be going around to see what was the damage, to contact the companies that I knew had food, to start talking to them directly. And then when I arrived there already with some food in my car, all the friends that I WhatsApped, they were there waiting. And we began cooking. And that first day, I think we did over 1,500 meals only. We went from 1,000 meals the first day and 20 friends and one restaurant. We went from 1,000 meals a day to 150,000 meals a day. We went from 20 friends to 25,000 volunteers. We went from one kitchen to 23 kitchens all across the island. At the end, we fed probably over 4 million people.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You went down to Haiti before you got to Puerto Rico.
Yeah. In the book is a chapter that we compare the American aid to Haiti, Port-au-Prince, after the earthquake, and our own aid to our own land. And in this chapter, we compare number of people that were sent, number of helicopters, number of military personnel, number of meals, all the assets that were available to us. And if you take a look, you will see that the response that we gave to Haiti was so much quicker, so much faster than the response we gave to Puerto Rico. And I'm very proud as an American that America did so well in Haiti, helping the great people of Haiti and the people of Port-au-Prince. But as an American, equally, I was so sad to see that the aid we gave to Puerto Rico, American territory, was not equal to the one we gave to Haiti. So the message here is this. The men and women of FEMA are amazing people. The men and women of our National Guard are amazing. The men and women of the many NGOs that help are astonishing. Everybody should be clap and honor because they are really good people. But fundamentally, the way FEMA has been structured is not the best way to be helping America sometimes anymore.
Why not? What is it that they don't do that you are able to do?
Because it's a super big corporation that is more handling contracts. And when you are hungry, if you have Americans hungry, you cannot start negotiating a contract with anybody. When we go to California and the firemen are hungry, on paper it's a contract between the firefighters and a catering company. But you know what happens to that catering company? That nobody's showing up to work because they are trying to save their homes and save their lives. So you need to think out of the box. That's why we cannot be contracted. We are an NGO. We go and we help when nobody is there to help. So I do believe we need, hopefully, the next Democrat or Republican administration, because I don't think this one is up to the task. They should look. They should. No, but I mean it in a nice way.
In a nice way.
FEMA is there to support Americans, and most of the time they do a great job, but sometimes they don't, and they are not self-critical of themselves. If you hear about what happened in Puerto Rico, I heard the president that gave himself and FEMA a 10. You know what? I give myself only a 5. Why? Because we fed 4 million, we did 4 million meals, but I wish we did 40 million because that's what was needed. So you cannot give yourself a high score and not be critical, because if you are not critical, means that nothing will ever change. And when something happens in Florida, South Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, New York, another hurricane hits or an earthquake, If the response is not there, all of you will suffer. And Americans deserve that their government is there for them in moment of this repair. That's why we need to look at how FEMA is organized, break FEMA into two, and start making FEMA do a better job in the way they serve Americans.
So I like to talk about what it was you fed them. And Sancocho is something that I've read, and I don't know what's in it.
It's so funny because I think you asked me that before, and I don't understand how I cannot answer to a question by the great Iron Rim. But my brain is so full of things that sometimes I forget the... So what we fed the first day is something called Sancocho. Any Puerto Rican in the room? So if it's Puerto Ricans in the room, I'm not going to describe what is Sancocho because they will criticize me. You have no clue what is in a Sancocho. It's like when I do paella, and in Spain they criticize me because this is not a paella. Because in an emergency, you try to do what you can with what you have. But then Sancocho is this amazing stew of pork and yuca and corn and many other root vegetables, very hearty. And because we had all of those things, we began making these big pots. And I remember the first delivery we did was to a hospital that they got a phone call via Paris because it was the niece of the director of the hospital that knew I was in San Juan. And I'm like, really? They're hungry? And we began cooking those pots and bringing them to the local hospitals because nurses and doctors were operating without lights. And sometimes I arrived and I saw them with an iPhone when they didn't even have generators that they were working because they didn't have gas or other issues. So Sancocho was the first thing. But very quickly, what happened? As the moment people knew we were feeding, the phone calls began getting to us. And when I mean phone calls, we'll be messaging. People will show up. And before we knew, we went in that first week from 1,000 meals a day to over 35,000 meals a day in a matter of 4 days. That's when I saw that the problem was bigger and we had to be moving. So we cooked sancocho, we made pastelón de carne, which is mashed potatoes with the ground meat, and we did these layers. We always do these aluminum trays that is food for 40 people, and they can go into these cambros that then allow us to have six of those trays. So every cambro equals 240, 250 meals. And then that's the way we transport the food, so it's always healthy and hot and everything. We began making arroz con pollo, chicken and rice, which is also a staple in Puerto Rico. So all the dishes we make obviously are based on the ingredients we have at our disposal, but then we make sure that the locals have what they like. Yeah. Nothing gives more hope and more joy to people than to give them something, a plate of food that sends one message very clearly. We care, be patient, things will get better. And when especially the food is to their liking, then you are bringing joy into their lives in a moment that they have only chaos. That's why we work so hard in bringing a good, humble plate of food. This last year alone, we've been in Indonesia. We responded to the first earthquake, first tsunami and second tsunami. We did close to 900,000 meals in Indonesia. Last month, I was in Venezuela. We're in Colombia. We are in the border in El Paso. We've been over 9-10 months in Tijuana. So everywhere we go, we don't impose what we like to eat. We listen to the locals to what they want to eat.
And what was the government offering in the way of food in Puerto Rico?
I'm guessing it's a lot of military here, and I'm amazed. What I have many men and women friends in the military, and when they go to battle combat zones, they have what they call the MREs, that meals ready to eat. But if you go and search MRE, is many different names that they use, the M, the R, and the E. And it's too many kids in the audience for me to be telling you. But MREs are brilliant. You can buy an MRE, you can put it in the middle of the highway, you come back 50 years later, and the MRE is still perfect. No. We should clap to our intellect. We've been able, as humans, to create something like this. When we are looking for alien life on Jupiter, I'm like, We have alien life. We have alien life here. We've made it. We've made it. I mean, you know, a memory is like a burger from a fast food chain I'm not going to name, that you put it in the middle of the road and you come back 50 years later and it's still there. And yes, I eat it too, but it's for you to understand. So that's the way we do it. And let me tell you what is a problem with this. Four MREs are very bulky, full of calories. All this is great. But four MREs occupy the space of 40 meals. So let's follow up this trend now. If you're trying to feed an island, let's say it's 1 million people, do you know the amount of space you need only to provide one MRE a day for 1 million people? You need hundreds, if not thousands, of helicopters. You need ships by the hundreds. You need planes by the hundreds. The space you occupy is so big. It's okay for 1 or 2 days. It's not something sustainable. Another thing happens. When we deliver foods, we deliver them in person and by foot. That's why we had 25,000 volunteers, because we are not cooks. We are distribution centers. But what happens? We show up every day. What happens with MREs? They go and they drop them and they leave. But when you show up every day, you began gathering information. You began gathering know-how. You start knowing what people need. All of a sudden, Diane, we know that some people have health issues with some foods or religious issues with some foods. We start accommodating to their needs. All of a sudden, somebody tells us, Jose, my grandfather is going to die because he doesn't have a generator, so his breathing machine is not working. We're able to bring them the generator. We need this medicine for this person that is sick. We bring that medicine. All of a sudden, what we do is more than feeding. What we're doing is having a real direct contact with neighborhoods and people that they are cut off from the response, and we make them feel that we care for them, and we connect them and bring them back to reality, and we try to make sure that they have everything they need. That's why it's so important what we do. It's beyond the plate of hot food. We show up every day until we believe that the problem is solved, and then slowly we move out. With MREs, we drop it, we go, and we forget about the people. Nobody knows anything else about that community. This is not the way to be providing the relief. We need to start providing relief following up.
So, Jose, from what you have just described, it sounds to me as though you have a plan to feed the world.
This one is a tough one for a lot of reasons, right? Let's say Washington, D.C., we don't need to go any further away. And in a city of 600,000 people, I think we are 670, no, sorry, we are about to reach 700. It's a city that is walk distance from Congress and the Senate. Let's say every one of you is a congressman and everybody of you is a senator. Obviously, you want to be taking care of your districts and your states, as it should be. But to me, it's very amazing that we have this experiment of democracy happen right here in Washington, D.C., so close from Congress, where many of the things should be happening here as a test to make sure that no veteran will be in the streets of Washington without home and hungry.
Absolutely.
How it is possible that we have veterans coming back and one day they end in the street? For whatever reason. The issue is that we cannot forget the rest of the world. We need to make sure that nobody's hungry in America, and so we need to make sure that nobody's hungry overseas. Why? All this border problem with immigrants coming and knocking on the door, let me tell you, I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, this is going to happen forever. I know about walls. I'm Spanish. You know how many walls we built in Spain over the centuries? You know how many castles we have? Let me tell you, when you have people that are hungry, it's no wall that will defend you about that. Because if you are a mother and your children are hungry, you're going to do whatever it takes to feed those children. So let me tell you what wall we should build. I believe that the America and the wall I want to leave to my daughters is one that they are going to be safe, not by me building a wall to protect them, but by me building a better world that gives them the option to enjoy that beautiful world of ours. If we build walls of inclusion versus walls of exclusion, if we build walls that are soup kitchens and universities and schools and hospitals and employment jobs and factories, all of a sudden, all these people south of the border, they are doing well. They're doing okay. They don't have to leave their homes looking for a better world. It's the destiny and the responsibility of the richer countries of the world to take care of the poorer countries of the world. We like it or not, it's the right thing to do.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Let's talk about your new book. This is a book about vegetables. And it's a book with fabulous recipes of vegetables. Why vegetables? Would you call Vegetables Unleashed?
Diane, what do you think they laugh when you introduce the book? I don't look like a chef that can write a book about vegetables. It's because my belly? I did this book for a simple reason. I love vegetables. And believe me, I know some of you are saying, sure, he's going to say that because he wants to sell his book. My wife is right here.
Where is she?
But believe me, that she's not here because me. She's here because she loves you. She told me that very clear because she never comes to see me to anything. I'm like, why are you coming today? I'm like, because Diane is there. I'm like, thank you.
That's so sweet.
And many of the recipes in this book are of my wife. And the recipes of my wife were from her mother and from her grandmother. Huh. No, all the recipes are Spanish. It's many recipes inspired in many parts of the world, including the United States. But I do believe we need to start taking vegetables more seriously. You know, I have a fast food restaurant called Beef Steak.
Yeah, beef steak. The beef steak sandwich.
And the beef steak was my way to put, let's call the money where the mouth is. Because sometimes we all talk about, let's change the world. But then Juicy stays in a conference room. Everybody claps like seals after you give them a sardine. But then you go home, everybody forgets. You look like cool, but you've done nothing. So I did this fast food restaurant to prove that we can have a restaurant, 99% vegetables, feeding America with vegetables in the right way, helping the local farmers. And that's what it is. That's why the book followed through. What if one day we stop eating so much meat and we start bringing more vegetables into our diet?
Tell them about the beefsteak sandwich.
Well, I love tomatoes. Oh, only two people love tomatoes? Grange tomatoes. Do you know Grange tomatoes? Lamar Alexander?
Lamar Alexander.
The senator?
Yes.
He brought me from his estate the Grange tomatoes.
Grange?
Himself, personally. Yeah. Probably one of the best tomatoes in the history of America.
Really? What color?
Reddish, pinkish. And right there I got bread, some mayonnaise, some salt, even a little bit more olive oil. a big thick piece of the tomato, the bread toasted. But if you don't like it toasted, it's fine. I'm gonna like you anyway. Don't tell me, but I'm gonna like you. And when you bring that sandwich,
don't
mayo.
Don't forget the avocado.
Did they have the avocado?
Yes.
Man. My people, I give them too much freedom. Yeah. Okay, on that particular, this recipe book is like the bills in Congress, that they start being something and they end being something else. Avocado, if you have avocado, but if they build a wall, you have no avocado, people. Well, you will have guacamole because we'll have people on the other side throwing the avocados over. We'll have retired baseball players catching them. And if they don't catch them, they'll smash and you'll have immediate avocado free of charge. But that recipe, I love simplicity sometimes more often than not. The mayo, the tomato, the bread, you bring it into your mouth. The crunchiness of that perfectly toasted bread that you bought in the farmer's market and you spend your entire week savings. That beautiful mayonnaise that is like telling you, oh my God, this mayonnaise, almost I should use it as a cream. And this juicy tomato that in the moment your teeth penetrate into the tomato is always the feeling that is cold but juicy and your mouth starts going in and you find between your teeth the little seeds and all the juices begin flowing around your mouth. Your tongue is telling you what's going on and you didn't finish the first bite and you are already doing the second. You are like an animal. Oof.
There's always a but. You have written a book about vegetables with wonderful recipes. But think about the number of people in this country, in this city, who do not have access to good vegetables, to even anything in the way of good vegetables.
I mean, how many of you go to the farmers markets during the week? Good people. Please, don't kick out anybody else. The ones didn't raise their hand. Keep them inside. That's okay. It's nothing like going to a farmer's market. And really, it's expensive, but you need to understand that somehow it's expensive for a lot of reasons. But the bounty of products we have around us is just astonishing. And I'm only asking everybody more often than not, just do the effort to go. Do the effort to learn. Sometimes you're going to find ingredients that you never imagined were so good. And believe me, don't buy with your eyes. Just buy with your tongue. That you see a beautiful peach and a beautiful tomato in a supermarket doesn't mean it's a tasty tomato, a tasty. Sometimes the ugly vegetables are the best ones. Be nice to them. They have feelings. They have emotions. It's terrible when they put them in this box of cheaper because they don't look nice. You should give them your love by bringing them into your home, by bringing them into your life. And we should behave equally with every single other human being next to us.
So why is it that too often a head of broccoli or a head of cauliflower is more expensive than a hamburger?
It's fascinating. No? When I say America equals every other country in the world, it's a lot of powers to be that they want us to eat the way we eat. But if you go and you look to the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, and you go and you put what the Department of Agriculture want us to eat, and now it's something in the old days used to be the pyramid, the food pyramid.
Of course.
I guess there were more Egyptians in the old days. Now... Now they are more interplanetary. Now is the my plate and it's round. If you look what the USDA tells us on my plate, it tells you that we should be eating 60-70% of fruits and vegetables. We should all be clapping to our government saying they care about us. They want us better. They want us healthy. They want an America that is invincible. But when you go to the farm bill and you see how much money the government puts towards subsidies to eat those vegetables, it's like 1-2% of the entire farm bill. So they want us to eat more vegetables. They are telling us 70%, but the government doesn't support with the money to make sure that. I have no problem with the big corn farmers, the big wheat farmers, and everybody else to make money. I'm a business guy. I want everybody to make money. But the subsidies only help the super big companies. Our little farmers don't receive the same subsidies. I'm only asking why we don't level down the playing field. If we give subsidies to the big organizations, let's give also the same subsidies to the little farmers. This way, broccoli and cauliflower will be as cheap as beef. What beef has to do with that? Because corn is subsidized. It's so cheap that you can be feeding with grains that is subsidized by all of us. So the meat and the ground meat is cheaper than the broccoli and the cauliflower. I love meat. I didn't achieve this body with cauliflower alone. But I want to even out the field. If we do that, America will be healthier. Our farmers in rural America will be better. We create more employment in rural America. America will have enough soldiers to join the military that right now we can't because we don't have enough men and women healthy enough to be joined our ranks. A whole bunch of problems will go away, one plate of vegetables at a time.
I have a beautiful head of cauliflower in my refrigerator now. Give me a wonderful, easy, fast recipe to cook that tonight.
Great. Everybody has a grater at home?
A grater.
A grater?
Yes.
A grater?
Yes.
Raise your hands.
Everybody.
Everybody has a grater, okay? Yes. Okay. If you don't have a grater, you go to your neighborhood. You say, can you give me a grater? If you have an accent like me, write it in a piece of paper. And I will get the cauliflower, and I will grate the cauliflower. And I will make it into little pieces like it was a couscous. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Then, okay, I'm from Spain, and I don't like to be using ingredients of other countries like Italy. But you should have a pasta. Not a very big pasta. It's a little pasta like orzo.
Okay.
Orzo?
Orzo.
Orzo. O-R-Z-O.
Right.
And, okay, are you with me?
Yeah.
And then some olive oil. But this time, the olive oil has to be from Spain. If it's not Spanish, ain't gonna be good. And then, all right, let's keep going Italy. Maybe balsamic, maybe apple cider, maybe a local cider, a local vinegar from Virginia, even better. So we have the cauliflower, we have the pasta, we have the... Okay, cheese, you like cheese? Cheese?
Yes, yes.
All right, if you like cheese, you can buy. Or a dry cheese, because you had this piece of cheese that has been in your refrigerator for the last 7 years, and it's, and it's so dry. You should put good face if you have guests. You should not say, oh, it's a piece of old cheese. You should say, I've been aging this cheese for the last 7 years, all right? And then you grate it. So you say, I'm not giving you anything else. If you like livid onion, you can put. If you have some tomatoes peeled, you can. But let's go simple. You boil the pasta. You have the grated cauliflower. 1 minute before you take the pasta out, you put all that cauliflower into the water. If you like it raw, you leave it outside. Then you strain it. You have the pasta now, the cauliflower. What's happening? They are talking to each other. They are excited because they are meeting people from another part of the world. They're like, wow, baby, where are you from? I'm from Naples, and you from Virginia. Wow, they are chit-chatting. They are having a good time. Then you have the cheese, the olive oil, the balsamic, or the cider. You mix salt. Maybe you have one of those spices that has been in your kitchen for 20 years. Same thing. You put a good poker face and you say, this is sesame seeds from 20 years, extra age. Great, fine. You toss everything and it's warm right now, so you don't want it too hot. It's the perfect dish. You see, you need to be thinking this way. One ingredient, two ingredients, they start meeting each other. Then you bring somebody else. The conversation goes on. They're happy. If they're happy, the dish is going to be good. That's my recipe.
Okay.
We're going to go like the Diane Rim cauliflower recipe.
Okay. We have time now for just a couple of questions. Go right ahead.
I wanted to know, what's your favorite food in the whole world?
My favorite food in the whole world, without a doubt, and I'm not patronizing anybody, is when my wife cooks at home.
I knew it.
And she'll tell you, it's not like it's her passion to be cooking. Actually, not. But when she arrives home from work or from many weeks, days or weeks of being away, and she has this plate of lentils that is the recipe from her mother, nothing makes me happier than a plate of the lentil stew she makes with a little bit of sherry vinegar on top. And tomorrow it'll be 24 years anniversary that we've been married.
Yay! Yay!
I know I'm not going to be with you tomorrow, but that's the way to make it up.
One last question.
Oh, thank you. Gracias. Pues, feliz aniversario mañana. My question is relating to volunteerism. You have like 25,000 volunteers or have had and are a literal going from the Spanish Armada to a humanitarian armada. How can I and how can any of us get involved as volunteers?
I hope that we never have to activate here in D.C., but we like to use in quantity the local people. Why? Because local people know best. Why? Because sometimes when you come from far away and you're trying to impose your ways to the locals, things take longer, and sometimes you're providing aid they don't need. And sometimes we don't listen to them, and they know best. They know where the water is. They know where the food is. They know where the medication is. They know what kitchens we can activate. They know where generators are. And sometimes when we come from outside, we impose our ways, but that's not sometimes the best way to provide quick, fast. But everybody can do something. Sometimes you don't even need to join an organization. If you see an elderly person crossing the street and you see that he's having difficulty, go right there and help that person cross the street. Maybe load in the supermarket besides yours the load of somebody else that is having difficulty to load. Everybody can volunteer any moment. You don't even need to join an organization. We only have to do one thing. I do believe that the new American dream is not only about taking care of your own and your people, but that the new American dream is about wishing for people you don't know the same thing you are wishing for your own. That's it. Then, can you join a bigger organization? Do it. But sometimes, your neighbor next door is the one that needs your help. You are your own organization. Every one of us, we are our own organization.
That conversation was recorded live this past Saturday as part of the Library of Congress National Book Festival. You can follow the work Jose Andres is doing right now for Hurricane Dorian on his Twitter feed. And that's all for today. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. A very special thank you to our engineers this week, Rashad Young and Natalie Yurev-Livker, as well as the entire team from the Library of Congress who made the National Book Festival possible. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.